The acclaimed writer Evan Cannell died on January 10th at the age of 88. Cannell grew up in Kansas City on 66th Street. He went to Southwest High School and the University of Kansas. Cannell moved away from the area after college and wrote about a wide range of topics in fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. But his novels Mrs. Bridge and Mr. Bridge are rooted right here. In 1989, former New Letters on the Air host Rebecca Presson Mosby talked to the author on the set. A bit of a coup because he rarely granted interviews. Today we're going to listen back to some of that 1989 interview.
I just feel uncomfortable on stage, either literally or figuratively. And I've never been a teacher. I've never given lectures or readings. I just don't really have much to say about it. I don't really understand how to write or how to go about it, and then I wouldn't presume to teach somebody else.
Does this give your publishers and your agent great cause for alarm?
Well, they seem to be quite discreet about it. I suppose any agent or any publisher would like for the author to promote the works as frequently and as effectively as possible, but I'm not very good at that.
Has it cost you a lot of sales, do you think?
I have no idea.
But you still manage to make a good living as a writer.
Oh, that's all relative. On the whole, I would have done much better, I think, to work for Standard Oil or something all these years.
Well, that wouldn't really be an option, though, would it?
I'm not sure Standard Oil would have employed me.
Evan S. Cannell Jr. was interviewed in his hometown of Kansas City, Missouri, out of doors in late 1989, on the set of Mr. and Mrs. Bridge, which has now been released as the latest Merchant Ivory film. Joanne Woodward portrays Mrs. Bridge, a wealthy country club matron, and Paul Newman is her stuffy lawyer husband. The film's script was written by Ruth Prior Jabala, but Cannell worked as a consultant. In the film, the characters' fates are clearly laid out. But the novel, Mrs. Bridge, ends with the title character stuck in her car and calling, "Hello, hello out there."
She has always been taken care of. She's always been rescued. And I would guess that somebody will hear her tapping or somebody will come along pretty soon and rescue her as always. Yeah. So many people have thought that it was terrible that she froze to death in the car, but there's nothing of that sort in the book. That's just the reader's assumption.
That's interesting. That's what I thought, too, is what you said. And my friend said, "Oh, she dies." And I thought, the car isn't running. There's no reason for her to die.
No. Yeah. Nobody ever freezes to death in the country club district of Kansas City.
When you wrote Mrs. Bridge, it was 1959, and the reception to the book was something different than it is now. Can you talk about how you were treated and how the book was received in Kansas City at that time?
I don't know that the reception was any different then than it is now. I'm not saying, I'm not contradicting you, I'm just saying I don't know. I just don't know. Well, some people have thought at that time, considered the books comedies, and others who were kind of annoyed by them, and I think the same thing is true today. I've heard quite recently some people saying that it's just like my parents, and some people say, well, it's long past, the times have changed. I think both points of view are correct. As far as I can tell, I don't live here now, but it seems to me that the underlying attitudes are almost identical to what they were years ago.
Is it like your parents?
Oh, the character of Mr. Bridge was founded more on the temperament and mind of my father than on any other individual. The Mrs. Bridge character, to a lesser degree, on my mother. A number of things were either variations of things that happened or things I had been told about the parents of other kids my age, and some things are simply fabrication.
What sorts of brothers and sisters did you have?
Oh, I have one sister. The two girls in the novels are our inventions. My sister is like neither of the two characters in the book.
Mrs. Bridge and Mr. Bridge, I suppose, to a lesser degree, but particularly Mrs. Bridge, strikes me as the epitome of all that's evil and ugly about money on the one hand, because she is so vacuous. She is such a nothing. But on the other hand, I had great sympathy for her. I thought that was a tremendous coup on your part to do that. Could you talk about creating that kind of type of character? Of course, as you well know, Mrs. Bridge has been called the most fully realized character in American fiction since World War II. So how do you go about realizing a character like that?
It was recollection, I suppose, more than anything else, and an attempt to empathize with the way a woman would feel at that time and place under those circumstances. I have the feeling that that this character was doing her best, and she felt a little inadequate, everything had always been provided for her, and she was quite conscious of this, and felt that she should somehow be contributing more to help other people some way, but she didn't quite know how to go about it. She meant well, but there really wasn't anything for her to do that she could see, that she could find.
Revolt of the Masses. The evenings were growing cooler. September was here, autumn not far to the north, and the trees rustled uneasily. Having ordered the groceries and having spent the remainder of the morning more or less listening to the radio, and being then unable to find anything else to do, she informed Harriet, who was in the kitchen furiously smoking one cigarette after another while cutting up dates for a pudding, that she had some shopping to take care of on the plaza and would not be home until late that afternoon. She felt somewhat guilty as she said this, because in reality there was no shopping to be done. But with the children again in school, and with Harriet to do the cooking and housekeeping, and with the laundress coming once a week to do the washing, Mrs. Bridge found the days were very long. She was restless and unhappy, and would spend hours thinking wistfully of the past, of those years just after her marriage, when a day was all too brief. After luncheon in her favorite tea room, she decided she might as well look at candlesticks. She had been thinking of getting some new ones. This seemed as good a time as any. On her way to Bancroft's, which carried the nicest things in the plaza, she stopped at a drugstore for a box of aspirin, then paused in front of a bookstore where her eye was caught by the title of a book in the window display, Theory of the Leisure Class. She experienced a surge of resentment. For a number of seconds she eyed this book with definite hostility, as though it were alive and conscious of her. She went inside and asked to see the book. With her gloves on, it was difficult to turn the pages, so she handed it back to the clerk, thanked him, and with a dissatisfied expression, continued to Bancroft's.
That was Jim Birdsall reading a chapter from Evan S. Cannell's novel, Mrs. Bridge.
I look at this with the eyes of someone living 40 years later than Mrs. Bridge, and I wonder if you think that's the reason for this. I keep seeing her having opportunities to do something with her life and then being afraid to take them.
It's probably a matter of temperament, not so much difference of 40 years, but the individual temperament. Some, no matter where you are, some people will find things to do, others won't.
Mrs. Bridge, as you just said, doesn't quite know what to do with her life. Mr. Bridge does know what to do. So we have, in some ways, a much stronger response to him, but a less empathetic response to him. And this has led people to side with one book or the other. Could you talk about what made you decide to write a Mr. Bridge?
Well, it was the obvious thing to do, particularly after the sort of success of the first book. Lots of people, friends and acquaintances, would say, well, now you have to write the story from his point of view. And I suppose that was one reason I didn't. I didn't want to mechanically reproduce the first book from a man's point of view. And secondly, quite apart from that, I just wasn't sure whether or not I did want to. Usually I try a different subject from one book to the next. So a number of years went by, and I found myself continuing to think about the story from his point of view, and I was on a long trip around the world. I think I was gone for over a year, just wandering around, and I was somewhere on the eastern end of the Mediterranean on some island, and just one day I realized I did want to do it, and I started taking notes immediately, and was piling up odds and ends, scraps of paper, and stuffing them in the suitcase, and at that point I really became anxious to finish traveling and settle down into the usual dreary routine where I could work from 9 to 5, so to speak, and get to work on it.
Did you refer to Mrs. Bridge while you were writing, Mr. Bridge?
Oh, yes. Several reasons. Sometimes an incident in the first book would suggest something different for the other book, and of course I had to be sure that I wasn't contradicting any of the facts, and after all it had been almost, well, about 10 years since I had written the previous book, and so some things slip, you know, you forget them.
You've done this several times now, written pairs of related books. Could you just discuss the impulse that makes you go back to a subject?
Probably the feeling that maybe if I try it again, I can do it better. Beyond that, I don't really know. I suppose it's just the feeling that I haven't fully exhausted that subject or that technique. And beyond, it isn't a conscious decision to duplicate anything.
Is it kind of like a painter who keeps working on a subject?
I think so. It's just you never get it right, and so you keep going back, and finally you move on to another subject, I think, as much out of frustration as satisfaction, just the feeling that, well, I just can't do any better on this, and so for better or worse, let's move on.
Was there actually any frustration about Mrs. Bridge that made you need to do Mr. Bridge?
That took a long time to write. I tried, I don't know how many years I was working on that. I tried, first of all, to write it a conventional novel, that is in the sense of it being 15 or 20 chapters with a dramatic climax, and there really wasn't any dramatic climax. The people I was writing about just they don't climb mountains or smuggle drugs or whatever. They just go through one day after another. I think it was Chekhov who talked about the people falling off stepladders and eating cabbage soup or something to that effect, and that's what most of us do. And so gradually it evolved into this fragmented structure. I think I put it aside and worked on another book and then came back to this one, and again it was rejected by 6 or 8 or 10 publishers, and before the Viking Press took a chance on it.
The writer Evan S. Cannell spoke to Rebecca Presson Mosby in 1989 for New Letters on the Air. Cannell died earlier this month at the age of 88. Casey Kern's associate producers are Alex Smith and Suzanne Hogan. Our interns are Monica Sandretsky and Zach Lewandowski. And theme music is by Approach.